desire y'all's prayers this morning. It is nice to see a few more folks in the chapel this Sunday rather than last Sunday. Glad to see folks getting better and getting back out. Have a little thought on my heart this morning. So what I wrote on the board is the phrase, my right, with some dots after it. But then I went back and I put a caret between the word my and right and inserted the word Christian there. And so I'd like for us to start thinking today, have you ever heard somebody make a statement, I have the right to do some activity? Or it's my right to do or act a certain way? Where do rights come from? So I'm going to read something that comes from the preamble of the Declaration of Independence. It says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now I'm sure all of us, for the most part, have heard these at some point in our life. And here it states that these rights come from the Creator. But what are those rights? Some people think that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is in the Constitution. It's actually not. The Declaration of Independence is simply a document that was written up to declare independence from Great Britain, to say this is why the states are no longer wanting to be subject to you. And let's pause for a moment while we think about rights. And I am just thinking about our basic, what the world would refer to as basic human rights. Consider what rights you would have if you lived in the following countries. What rights would you have if you lived in England, the country we as a nation separated from? Would the rights be different? What rights would you have in China? Would there be a difference in rights you would have there? What about Russia? Would we say that our rights might change if we lived in Russia? Japan. What about North Korea? What rights would you have in North Korea? What about Brazil, down in South America? Would we say that the folks in all of these countries share the same rights? We might say they should be able to share the same rights, but the reality is, from the way you would find life, the rights are not the same in all those countries. And one thing that I would like for us to consider is, where do rights come from? In our country, we tend to look to the Constitution to define what rights we have. This is the rights as we see them. But what happens if the Constitution didn't exist? What would we have? And what Christian rights do we have? So if I'm a Christian, let's look at that list of country again. If I'm a Christian and I live in England, what rights do I have? Think through the history of England. What rights did Christians have throughout the history of England? Did they always have the same rights? Not from a social viewpoint. Not from the way the laws of the land were written. But do you know the Christians themselves always had the same rights? And we'll be getting to that in a bit. What about in China? If you're a Christian in China, what rights would you have? What about Christians in Russia? Christians in Japan? Christians in North Korea? Do they have rights? From a legal viewpoint, we might say no. But do you know if they're true Christians? There's a right. There's a right that they have. So let's look at something. We're not going to turn and read these, but let's just think about the Ten Commandments. I'm going to read a kind of abbreviated version of them. I am the Lord thy God. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Honor thy father and thy mother. Thou shalt not murder. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Thou shalt not covet. Now, the Ten Commandments, kind of you could consider it the start of the law. And what rights did it give us? Did it give us any rights? In the essence of, in our world today, we would say freedom of speech. You know, that's a right here in America. What rights did the Ten Commandments give us? Or did it really not give us a defined right in the way the world likes to define a right? The world likes to put rights out there as this is something you get to do. Nobody can take it from you. This is your right. But as a Christian, what did we get from the Lord? Well, you have the right to worship the one true God. And you shouldn't put any other before him. You have the right to not follow any false graven images, to not set up dead gods before you. You have the right to do that. You have the right to not dishonor God. You have the right to honor and respect him, to show him the proper homage that he needs. On the Sabbath day, the day that he made holy, you have the right to step back and say, Lord, I am going to pause what I'm doing. And I'm going to take this time and exercise the right you gave me to honor you, to ponder on you. You have the right to respect your father and mother. Isn't it the first commandment with promise? You have the right to respect life by not murdering, by not killing. You have the right to respect your fellow man by not committing adultery, by not stealing. You have the right to honor truth, to share truth by being true to your word. You have the right to respect other people, not covet what they have. Have you ever considered those rights instead of restrictions? Because if you read them the proper way, these are your rights. These are things God has said, I've put this in place. And while oftentimes are looked at in the negative, if you look at what they actually are telling you to do, we have some pretty interesting rights. So now let's turn to Matthew. Matthew chapter 22. Verses starting in verse 36, some familiar verses, says, Master, which is the great commandment in the law? Jesus said unto him, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it, Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. So once again, let's ask ourselves, what rights do you get from these two commandments? Do you get the right to say harsh things to people? Do you get the right to assert yourself to demand you be treated a certain way? The world loves to talk about rights, but oftentimes I think they miss the point of what is right. How do you apply these two commandments to our lives if you're subscribing to your rights from the worldly view? Because the first commandment, the first great commandment says, put God before everything. That means it goes before your rights. Or at least I should say your civil rights. And then put your neighbor ahead of those two. Our world today tries to tell you, you don't have to. You need to stand up. Defend yourself. Don't take it. What rights do you think Jesus had when he was in heaven as the Son of God? What rights did he have? The Son of God, as far as we know from the Word, there in the beginning, was there when the earth was formed. What rights did he have, and how has he exercised them? Let's turn to Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 2, starting in verse 14. For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also himself likewise took part of the same, that through death he might destroy him that had the power of death, that is, the devil, and deliver them who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. For verily he took not on them the nature of angels, but he took on him the seed of Abraham. Wherefore in all things it behoved him to be made like unto his brethren, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make reconciliation for the sins of the people. For in that he himself hath suffered long, being tempted, he is able to succor them that are tempted. So here we see how Jesus exercised his rights. He had not sinned. He had the right not to die. There was no need for him to die. He was perfect. Even when he came to earth. And how did he exercise his right? He said, Lord, I'm in the garden and this is tough. Because I realize now I've got to give this up. Why? Because I love these people. And if I don't give up my right to not taste death, they won't be able to pay the price. They won't. But if I can give this up, Lord, if you can give me the strength to let this go, they all will have the ability to say, the debt's been paid. Have we considered how Christ exercised his rights? Giving up the glory of heaven to come down and live on earth. He's the Son of God. Doesn't he have a right to be in heaven? But he said, Lord, if it'll help me better understand and better be a advocate for these people, I'll give that up. I'll let that go. What kind of treatment did he receive on earth? Did he come down here and everybody said, oh, that's a fine, outstanding young man. Listen to him speak. Such a great orator. Let's get him into the coliseums and the auditoriums. Everybody needs to come listen to this young man. He has such wonderful news. Instead, he was shamed, mistreated. Was it rightful for him to be treated that way? For us, humanity, his creation, to treat the Creator that way? But he let go of the right to be treated as Creator. Why? Because I love them, Lord. I want these people to be successful, and I'm willing to give that right up too. Taken to trial. In our world today, we believe every man has a right to a fair trial. Did Christ have that right? He had the right, but did he get it? Now, have you considered that when he went to trial, he knew he wasn't going to get a fair trial? Jesus knew when he walked to Jerusalem, he knew the outcome. He knew why he was there. I'm going to be taken. I'm going to be tried. I'm going to be found guilty. and I'm going to die. Is it right that an innocent man be put to death? No. Not from our civil view, not from our spiritual view. It's not right that an innocent person should die. But Jesus said, it's my right as the Son of God to submit. It's why I'm here. This is the ultimate right, is to be able to not stand up with my back, to not stand my ground, but to submit. And why did he do all of that? Why would he give up all of these rights? Let's go to 1 John. 1 John chapter 4, starting in verse 10. Herein is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, we ought also to love one another. No man hath seen God at any time. If we love one another, God dwelleth in us, and his love is perfected in us. So if we look back now, what right was Christ exercising? The right to love. What does the Bible say God is? God is love. So what he was actually exercising was the greatest right that could ever be given to anybody. Love. Love completely. Did it require him? Was there any right we had that required him to die for us? No. It was our debt, our mistakes, our disobedience. I know I've looked back at my life, and I can say with certainty Christ was not involved in any of my errors. It was 100% me. He had no culpability. He had no reason to come down and say, I'll help you pay that debt. I had no right to stake and say, Lord, but. Other than, Lord, but for your mercy. Where would I be? You know, these verses talk about no man has seen God. You know, nobody has seen God face to face. Not living mortal on earth. And if you think about that, how do we show God to the men around us? What is it? Christ used to say all the time, if you've known me, you know who? The Father. Why? Because I'm doing the will of the Father. I'm trying to show you the love of the Father. I am trying to emulate the Father as best I can so that when you look at me, you might as well be looking at God. Have we considered that right in our lives as Christians to live that way? Through the strength of Christ, we should be trying to say, let me show you. Let me show you the right to love people over the right to have the front parking spot in the mall. Have you ever seen people get the honking horns at each other in a parking lot because they both wanted the same spot? I've been amused before because I've watched people spend 15, 20 minutes edging each other's and waving and hollering. And if they'd have just backed up, in 20 minutes, another spot probably would have opened even closer. If they were willing to wait that long, they should have just went and found one without all the fuss. And by not showing the love, the person that they were interacting with didn't see God. What about driving? And I'm going to speak of a guilty fault of mine in the past. I have the right to be in this lane. But you know what else I have? I have the right to yield to that person. I actually have the right to hit my brakes and slow down without honking the horn. You know, I'm not required to honk that horn. It's not part of what I need to do. Sometimes my earthly self feels like, They cut me off. Honk! What did I just show? Did they see Christ in that? No. What they saw was pure flesh. What about when we're speaking with people? Have you ever felt like you just had the right to tell somebody off? I've got the right to let you know the way I feel. Do we? The Bible does tell us to talk to our brethren. It talks about if you have aught with your brother, you're to go to them, to talk to them. But do you think it means that you just go lambast them? No, we have the right to do it in love. In fact, if you read the whole sequence of events that you're supposed to be doing with that person, first talking to them one-on-one, privately, trying not to spread the issue abroad, trying to be careful for feelings and respectful of people, then maybe bringing in a few more if that can't resolve it, and then only after you've spent time and effort do you make it a little more obvious that there's a disagreement. Why? Because of your right to love like the Father. Your right to say, yes, we have a disagreement. How does Christ work with us? If you err, how does Christ work with you? And I'm going to speak, not meaning facetiously, but does he send me a message and I get up and say, okay, I'm going to pick on you, Brother Dion, if you don't mind. Brother Dion, the Lord told me that X, Y, and Z, and you need to take care of it now. I got witnesses here in the whole congregation. You just need to line up. Does the Lord do that to us? Could he? He's God Almighty. He knows everything. You know what I found the first thing the Lord does? He reaches down and goes on my shoulder. Sometimes I feel like it's more thump, thump, thump on the top of the head. Depends upon how hard my hearing is. And he starts working with me individually. And then sometimes if I'm still not quick, do you know sooner or later there'll be a brother or somebody that'll reach out and say, hey, Brother Eric, you got a moment? I'd like to talk. The Lord follows his own instructions, folks. Why? He loves us. He wants us to understand the greatest privilege we have in the world is love. And that can't be taken away by any law, by any constitution. You go to any of those countries I mentioned earlier, any of those countries, and what you're going to find is you can love anyone, anywhere. They cannot make you not love them. It's a choice you have. Christ died for everybody on this planet, including the brutal dictators, including the murderers, the what we would consider just the absolutely worst of the worst of people. And Christ said, I love them. And I'm going to die for them. Because I want them to know the right of love. The right to let yourself go, to say, Lord, I want your way. Now, I want us to take a look at something. I'm going to go back to the phrase, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. So, let's turn to John chapter 10 and verse 10. It says, the thief cometh not before to steal and to kill and to destroy. I am come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly. So, life, if you look at it the right way, is a right the Lord has given to us. But what kind of life is it? So let's look on over into John chapter 15, verse 13. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. So you have a right to your life. But what is your right around? Is it around doing what you want to with the life? Or is it using that life for others? What rights have we been given? Let's look in Galatians chapter 2. Galatians chapter 2, verse 20. I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. So yes, life is one of those things that's given to us from God, as called out by the preamble of the Constitution, but not to be lived selfishly. Not to be lived for ourselves, but to be lived for others, to be lived for Christ. Liberty. So let's turn to Luke. Luke chapter 4, let's look at verses 18 and 19. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he hath anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He hath sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives, and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised, to preach the acceptable year of the Lord. So we see this indeed, liberty is one of the things Christ went to bring us. But what is this liberty? So let's go back to Galatians. Galatians chapter 5, verse 13. For brethren, ye have been called unto liberty. Only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh, but by love serve one another. Have we noticed a second theme here? Once again, love. And your liberty is not for you. It's for others. Psalms 119, 45. Not going to turn to that one. Just going to read it real quick. And I will walk at liberty, for I seek thy precepts. Now, here's David saying, I'm going to walk at liberty because I'm going to follow the restrictions of the law. Have we ever considered that liberty is actually not what our world would like to have you think? That it's some freedom from constraint, freedom from restrictions? That liberty is actually about being able to make the right choices, limit the right things? That's true liberty? Now, what about the pursuit of happiness? Does the Bible say anything about the pursuit of happiness? Let's turn to Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 12. Let's read verses 1 and 2. Wherefore, seeing we are also compassed about with so great a cloud of witness, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. So, how are we supposed to pursue happiness? The same way Christ did. How did he do it? Well, he said, Father, nothing makes me happier than knowing you love me. And nothing makes you happier than if I'm obedient and show my love to you that way. So, Father, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to submit. Because instead of just you and I up here in heaven, we'll have all of these believers who have also learned to love the same way we love up here as well. And we'll have a society of people who understand the right to love one another to the point that we're willing to prefer our brothers and sisters above ourselves. Can you imagine what it would be like in the parking lots at Christmas time if that love was in the world today? People would start parking in the back of the lot. Why? Well, somebody else may come along that needs one closer, and I can walk, I'll park back here. Have you ever considered the difference? Because why? I would have the right to park back here. You can't make me park up front. That somebody else might need that spot. A different way of looking at rights. Ecclesiastes 2, verses 9 through 11. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. So here we see what happens when you focus on just the earthly fulfillment of pleasure and happiness. It brings vanity, it brings vexation. You know, we hear of people winning large sums of money at the lottery. And what does it bring them? I've read accounts that they find they've got suddenly crazy relatives coming out from all over the place, people claiming to be relatives that aren't. Sometimes the folks have no idea how to manage that sum of money and they get in trouble. Were they happy once they won the money? Did it really bring them the happiness they thought it would bring? No. Because now they're wanting to hold on to it, but everybody else is wanting some too. Now what if instead of looking at it as, oh, I have all of this money for myself, if instead they said, you know what, why don't I just try to help others? I really don't need all that money. I can only spend so much on myself. I only need one, maybe two vehicles to get around. I don't need seven houses in three different places. I'll just give the extra away. How much vexation is there in that? Be a lot easier. There might be some stress of people saying, well, I want some, but all in all, it'd be way easier to get rid of it than to try to hold on to it, use it selfishly. And then here, 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 6 through 9. Wherein ye greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if need be, you are in heaviness through manifold temptations, that the trial of your faith, being much more precious than of gold that perisheth, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ, whom, having not seen, ye love, in whom, though now ye see him not, yet believing, ye rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory, receiving the end of your faith, even the salvation of your souls. Now notice how the salvation of our souls, full of glory, joy unspeakable, but it also mentions that there's going to be parts of it that's not necessarily going to be that nice. Wherein ye greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if need be, ye are in heaviness through manifold temptations. But what are we looking for? That everlasting joy, not the joy here. Is it nice to have joyful days here? Yes. I don't want anybody to think that we're not supposed to have good days here. The Lord gives us. But he's also going to allow us to be tempted and tried, to refine us, to purify us. So I'd like for us to just remember, we need to keep our rights framed by the perfect will of God and what he would have us to do. We have the right to not say mean things. We have the right to give way to our brethren. We have the right to back up and submit and not insist on having our ways, but instead trying to show the world the perfect love of God. Y'all pray for me.